This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, State Representative John Bison joins us. The Battle Creek Republican weighs in on where the state may look for more money for roads. But first, a new report from the Kalamazoo-based Upjohn Institute for Employment Research begins with the words, Michigan has a problem. That problem is that students in the state's K-12 schools are falling behind students in other states. Kevin Hollenbeck is vice president and senior economist with the Upjohn Institute, and he led the research team that produced the report called The Road Toward K-12 Excellence in Michigan. Kevin Hollenbeck, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Let me begin by reading from the introduction of the report. Michigan is a state in which education has been accorded high priority by policymakers, parents, businesses, educational watchdog organizations, the media, and others. Yet student achievement has been stagnant over the last decade. How did that happen?
Well, I think mainly the problem has been the economic situation in Michigan. There was a national recession in the early 2000s. There was a bigger recession in the 2007-2009 timeframe. And sort of in between those recessions, Michigan really did not recover as much as other states because we had a lot of restructuring and reengineering going on in the automotive industry. And so we think a large share of the blame, if you want to use that word, goes to the economic picture in the state.
So is there money right now that Michigan could be spending on education that you have found they are spending somewhere else and therefore it could be reallocated?
Not really. We tried to shy away from making any specific recommendations about how the legislature would fund or how much they should fund education. We do think there should be some more funding. But it turns out that the Michigan economy is not at all strong. And in the report, we show that the growth rate in the economy over the last decade or so is 49th out of 51 states plus the District of Columbia. Our economy is not strong. Despite having a weak economy, we've done pretty well in funding education. The share of our economy that goes to K-12 education is above many states. We're in the middle of the pack or even a little bit above the middle of the pack in terms of share of funding going to education. So we have a problem. We believe that funding is crucial to improve education. We're in a situation where the economy is sort of just now recovering from deep recessions and there isn't a lot of funding out there. And so it's a problem that will take a long time to be resolved, I think.
I don't want to go off on too much of a tangent here, but when you say the economy is not strong, if Governor Snyder or a member of his administration were here, they would point out, X number of jobs created over the last few years. They'd point out that the state unemployment rate is now matching the national unemployment rate for the first time in 15 years. Is the state's economy getting stronger, and could that help alleviate part of the problem you've spelled out in this report?
Right. There's certainly all the evidence is pointing that the state is doing much better with its economy over the last few years. We are gaining jobs and reducing the unemployment rate. So, yes, we think economic growth is a part of the answer to more funding for schools.
You also do point out, however, that Michigan has a problem in terms of the money spent on education actually getting to classroom instruction. What could the state do, or is there something they can do to guarantee that a higher percentage of that money spent on education is actually being spent in the classroom?
Right. We've made six major recommendations in our study. If the legislature, and we believe it should, find more resources for education, it doesn't make a lot of sense just to spend the money as it has been spent in the past. We're not getting the results that we would like. And so we're calling for targeting the spending through some demonstration projects that have been shown to work in other settings. So it's important that the spending does get directed to instruction. Michigan has a big problem with legacy costs. We don't really get into solving that issue, didn't really address that issue. I think that the state is sort of addressing that with some of their pension initiatives. But you're absolutely right, Gordon. We need to make sure that any additional resources that can be found get directed to instruction.
Should the state be focusing on at-risk students? Should they be focusing on students who have come from low-income families, perhaps low-income areas of the state? Is that a concern as well?
Absolutely. A big emphasis of the report is focusing on getting resources to low-income students. We found kind of this insidious effect that the more low-income students in a district, the worse results are for both low-income and non-low-income students. In our report, we've identified 7 exemplary states in terms of student achievement and in terms of helping low-income students. And to give you a sense of the comparison, Michigan currently has a funding source for low-income students called Section 31A categorical, and it works out to about $600 per student. 6 out of the 7 states that we looked at give additional funding for each low-income students on the order of $2,000 to $5,000 per student. So Michigan, relative to those states, is quite far behind in terms of funding low income. And we think that overall student achievement in the state will clearly need to include the low income students as well. Interestingly, it's the case that no state has really done a great job at decreasing the gap between low income and non-low income students. So we can't criticize Michigan for not reducing that gap. No state has really done it very well.
But have some states done it better than others?
But some states have done it a bit better than we have and still maintain much better test score results for everybody.
The last time that Michigan made a major change to how it funds schools was back in the 90s with something called Proposal A, approved by voters, which changed the funding mechanism in many ways. Is that part of the problem, as you see it right now, with where Michigan stands in terms of education and financing?
The impetus for our study, which was funded by 3 Michigan foundations, the Kellogg Foundation, the Steelcase Foundation, and the Skillman Foundation, the impetus was to look at the effect of Proposal A on student achievement. So that was sort of the whole goal of the project. Proposal A was not really an education proposal. It was really a property tax relief proposal. But it also had a very beneficial effect in terms of equalizing funding across districts in Michigan. During the 90s, funding got more equal across districts, and all districts were seeing increases in student achievement. The problem came along in the 2000s when the economy started going bad and the state could not continue to increase the foundation grant as much as it had been earlier. And furthermore, Michigan was losing population and losing student enrollment. And Proposal A actually ends up hurting districts that decline in enrollment. The reason for that is that if you lose a student, you lose the entire foundation grant, but your costs really don't change very much. You still need the same number of classrooms, the same number of teachers, and so forth. And so
you have to lose a certain number of students before you can justify having one less teacher.
Exactly. Over the last few years, about 3/4 of Michigan's school districts have lost enrollment. So this is going on in the majority of school districts. So we think it's time to tweak Proposal A, alter Proposal A. I would say in this study, we looked at funding mechanisms in other states. And most states, when they went to a foundation grant system, have been using what they call categorical funding or special pots of funding in their budgets for flexibility purposes. What seems to be happening in Michigan is we went to a foundation grant system, but we also have been cutting back on categoricals. And so we really don't have a lot of flexibility in our funding system, despite the fact that the 500-plus traditional school districts and 200-plus charter school districts are different, have different needs, different student characteristics. And so the funding system just doesn't serve, it doesn't have a lot of flexibility in it.
You make a recommendation that there be an allowance for what are called local enhancement millages. If this were to be implemented, how would this work? Would voters in a school district have the chance to boost education funding on their own?
Yes. Since the state economy is limited, it's growing, but it's limited, we think a source of resources to bring into education would be local property wealth. And so we believe that one change to Proposal A would be to allow a limited local enhancement millage. We propose supplementing that millage for those locations that don't have the same property wealth as other locations. We also would like to somehow design this system so that the money gets spent on instruction, as we were talking about before. And we think that if a location would fund such a millage, we're suggesting 3 mills for up to 5 years, then the charter schools in that district, since they don't have a
school
community,
district elections,
per se, they don't rely on property taxes or can't, they would also receive the additional funding. Community passes this millage, it goes to the traditional and to the charter school districts in our proposal.
There currently is an allowance for an enhancement millage countywide or in an intermediate school district, which has been passed by KRESA in the KRESA area, for instance. Are you saying that that's not enough for schools to be able to enhance education and enhance their finances?
That's correct. Kalamazoo has been very fortunate and is obviously very supportive of its educational districts in passing that millage. That millage has not passed in most other intermediate school districts. The problem with that system, it does allow local enhancement, but the problem is that it requires the majority of all the voters in a fairly large region comprised of multiple districts with multiple different needs and interests, and it's hard to get conflicts resolved at the local level. So we think a local district millage would work better.
So as I noted, the report is called The Road Toward K-12 Excellence in Michigan. Does that indicate that it is something of a long journey? Is this a long-range thing where you look out on the horizon and say, we've got to be here in 10 years, here in 15, et cetera?
It absolutely is a long-range journey. There are no silver bullets. No legislator is going to come up with something today that's going to show an impact next year, in my humble opinion. So what I'm saying is we need to take this mindset for the long haul, that it's due to the recession and restructuring and so forth of the last decade that's hurt our students educationally. We want to be able to look the students in the face 10, 15, 20 years from now and say, you know, we've done all we can, and now you are competitive with all other states.
Kevin Hollenbeck, thank you for your time.
Sure. Thank you, Gordon.
Kevin Hollenbeck is vice president and senior economist with the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research in Kalamazoo. He also was the lead economist on a report called The Road Toward K-12 Excellence in Education. A link to the Upjohn Institute report and a longer version of this interview can be found at WMUK.org. Thank you. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. State Representative John Bison is in his first term. The Republican lawmaker represents Battle Creek and the surrounding area in the 62nd District. Thank you very much for being here.
It is my pleasure and honor to be here with you, Gordon. Thank you so much.
Also joined today by Battle Creek Inquirer reporter Jennifer Bowman.
Thanks for having me.
Jennifer, first question for Representative Bison.
Sure. Dr. Bison, earlier this month we saw Proposal 1 defeated. It looked like voters had made a decision. And now we're looking for that Plan B that seemingly did not exist when we were going for this proposal. What do you think lawmakers learned from that, from the voters rejecting that proposal?
Well, the voters just didn't reject it. They tromped on it. You know, this is the biggest loss of any constitutional proposal since the Constitution was written, unless I'm mistaken. And they just did not like this proposal. And that doesn't mean that we don't have work in front of us. Their message to me was very, very clear. They want good roads here in this state. Many of them would be willing to pay more for good roads. And I feel it's up to us in the legislature to give them what they want, what they need, what is good for business, what is good for our citizens.
If they're willing to pay more, how do you think they're willing to pay more? Because they pretty resoundingly said, don't increase the sales tax.
I think we need to be a little bit more creative in what we do. The very first thing that I personally would like to do is prioritize our spending, and so we put more towards roads as opposed to some of the other projects that we are currently funding. And I think there are a number of others in the legislature with me who would like to see us use that approach. But when it comes to roads, I would love to see new and innovative ideas. The idea of toll lanes have been kicked around for a number of years. You can't do toll roads. You can't convert a federally funded road to a toll road because the road is already built, it's paid for. But that doesn't mean that if new construction is not needed, if you don't need an additional lane or two, that you can't have toll lanes. And I think that with advances in technology, toll lanes are becoming increasingly a possibility. What if we were to have roads where you would have specific lanes, maybe designated just for cars, that you had increased speeds and you had this glass-like surface that you could just go running down? And would that be worth a couple dollars to you, especially if you were running late one day? I think that there still might be some use for the likes of a toll lane. I would love to explore using more additives in our roads and see if we can't come up with a mix to find a road that lasts longer than the 3 or 4 or 5 years that it seems like our roads are lasting these days. And we simply need to do a better job at making sure that the roads last, be it that the warranties that we need to look at or some of the other factors.
Do you agree with the governor who has said that you may be able to reprioritize some spending, but somewhere you are going to have to find more revenue for roads?
I think that that depends to some degree on what kind of society you want to live in. You know, if you say that you want to live in a society where you have just bare essentials being provided by the government, you could come up with $1.2 billion. You could come up with $5 billion.
Okay, well, you get a vote here. What kind of society do you want to live in?
Oh, no, I think that my job is to represent my district, and my district, I think, would be willing to pay a little bit more for roads, and I feel that my job is to do what my district wants to see. This isn't about John Bison. This is about the 62nd District, and I feel that my job is to represent that district, and so although I have some very conservative ideals, I would not go so far as to say that we don't need new revenues. And if we have new revenues, I would love to see those revenues being a shared sacrifice among many different players rather than simply pouncing on one group or the other group saying that, this is your baby and you have to pay for this.
Jennifer?
A lot of the criticism about Proposal 1 was people said, I just don't get it. It's complicated. The package has so many things that seem so unrelated. I mean, do you think it's still possible that we can get, our roads fixed where, you know, one, people understand it and they know what you're voting for when you're representing the district? You know, when I went to your forum, your town hall, there were people who were frustrated. Some of them didn't want to spend more money. I'm wondering, you know, how you kind of deal with that.
That's one of the challenges that I really find a key challenge. And I don't know that we ever get to perfect. And you are not going to make all the people happy any of the time. sometimes I don't even make myself happy. But, you know, you do what is good for the people that you represent, and you just aren't going to make all the people happy all of the time, and you have to do what is best for the majority of the people, looking out for all the people, and making sure that the solutions that we come up with. And what I got from Proposal One, and Jennifer, you know more than anyone else about Proposal One. You did some very nice work on Proposal
One.
Thank you for that reporting. Mm-hmm. But it was a very complicated ballot initiative. There were some 14 or 15 different moving parts. There were, in order to get it on the ballot, we needed to have 2/3 of both houses to put it there. And much of what I have heard is that people don't want us to bring the roads package back to them. They want us to take care of this. And I am under the impression that the people who are currently there, at least in the House, are saying, no, this is something that we have to take care of. They're going to take ownership of this, and they want to find a solution.
What's your level of optimism? You know, there's been a lot of criticism thrown at the legislature about, you know, you guys need to go get it done. And it's been quite a while, even before your time, before they could, you know, get something done. Is that possible?
Perhaps I'm an eternal optimist. I think that Governor Snyder is a very good leader, and I think that he has, similar to myself, the best interests of this state in mind. That's his constituency, and I am looking forward to his leadership. I think that we have a brand new group in the House. They are perhaps a little bit more conservative than the last group that was there. But that doesn't mean that they don't want to do good things for this state. In the last election, our people here throughout the state chose new leaders. We had a very big freshman class, and I think that freshman class on both sides of the aisle has been working reasonably well together. And I'm optimistic. I really do think that we are going to get this done. I really do think that we are going to be able to come forward with a package, and I don't know what that package is going to look like quite yet. There's a lot of discussion to go, but you heard the Senate say, we aren't leaving this summer. We're going to be around here.
Should the House do the same thing?
I believe that the House is looking at that as well. I believe that everyone in the House wants to get this done. And if that means staying and working a little bit more, then I know I'm more than happy to do that. And I can't imagine that many of my colleagues aren't also more than happy to put in the hours and to do the work of the people.
If you are not going to go back to the voters in some fashion, does that limit what you can do? Because under the Michigan Constitution, for instance, a sales tax increase would have to be approved by the voters. Mm-hmm. There are other options out there, but does that limit the sources you could go to for more revenue if you're going to say, yes, we as the legislature are going to approve something?
I think we have lots of different options available to us, if I may say, Gordon. Yes, for a sales tax increase, we need to go to the people because that's constitutionally defined. But if we wanted to reduce the sales tax, if we wanted to increase the use tax, the fuels tax, that's not a constitutional issue. That's a legislative issue, is my understanding, and we could do that. And there are new and different taxes. We may want to look at different sources for funding. One of the things that you're the very first person to actually hear in public is that we may want to take a look at different sources of revenue. One of the things that we have kicked around for a while is legalization of marijuana. There are those who say that we could get $800 million for the legalization of marijuana in the taxes that would be paid. And here again, you're talking to someone who is against smoking, someone who thinks that smoking is a very, very bad thing.
I remember last time we talked with you.
And I know that smoking does bad things for us. And the question becomes, if we are going to increase taxes, would that be one that we might possibly even want to look at? And
are you open to it?
I would be open to the will of the people. I don't think that this is something that the legislature should do. That if you want to change our society so profoundly as to legalize marijuana for those over the age of 25, because the brain is developing until the age of 25, and I think that drugs do a very bad thing to developing brains. And one of the things that for me to be on board with anything like this, it would have to be for a very adult population, older than 21, because I just got back from the Hawthorne Center out in, I think it's Livonia or Dearborn Heights, down on the east side of the state, where we have children who are hospitalized for psychiatric illnesses. And I was talking to the medical leadership up there, and they were saying that marijuana use, marijuana abuse, marijuana habituation is a secondary medical diagnosis, and something like 70% of the people that they admit to that psychiatric institute. And I walked away scratching my head saying, wow, that's not only a number that's going up, does that tell us something?
Okay, so just so I understand here, you are saying that if we're going to legalize marijuana and take that tax money, put it to roads, you would want the voters to approve that?
Yes, I would not want this to be a legislative effort because...
But you're going back to the ballot then and not a legislative solution.
In part, because that's not going to get you the money for roads. You know, that's not going to get you enough money to pay for all of the roads by doing that. And it would be great to have more money for school, more money for medical treatment here within the state. I think that there are lots of other things that we can use that money for outside of roads. And if we're going to use that as a possible source of increased funding going into the future, it doesn't necessarily all have to be for roads. We could use it for a number of different options. And I'm saying that this is something that I would want the people to say, yes, this is a good thing, or no, this is a bad thing. Because as I see it, this profoundly changes some of the tenets that we have in society, some of our relationship to drugs, what we say is permissible and not permissible.
Jennifer?
Can you give me a sense of, I mean, how serious are some lawmakers about throwing out that possibility? I mean, you can talk to a man on the street and go, hey, you know what will solve everything? Just legalize marijuana and you get that tax revenue. And now, of course, that discussion's gotten more serious with you know, the legalization in other states. But, you know, I mean, how serious are we about, you know, what kind of support?
I don't know what the support would be because I haven't floated this through many of my colleagues other than through some private emails with certain of the leadership.
And well, Representative Brandon Dillon has put this idea out there, wrote an op-ed that ended up in M Live.
He did indeed. You know, there are just a couple of ideas. And if you have to think out of the box, if you have to think of all possible options, I think that it's something that at least deserves more consideration. And if we're going to do this as many people have suggested for all over the age of 21, that I'm very much against that. I don't think that that's the right answer. I think that we need better answers than that. But if you're talking about what consenting adults ought to be permitted to do in a society, you have to ask the question of, is marijuana a gateway drug? You have to ask, we have enough problems with alcohol as it is. Do we want to compound that with the legalization of marijuana? And exactly what kind of society do we want to live in? That's, in my mind, a question for society and not for the legislature.
Representative Bison, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I very much enjoy seeing you, Gordon, and Jennifer, and look forward to a continued discussion.
Republican John Bison represents Battle Creek and the surrounding area in the 62nd State House District. Thanks again to Battle Creek Inquirer reporter Jennifer Bowman.
Thank you.
A longer version of this interview, including Representative Bison's thoughts on prevailing wage, no-fault insurance reform, and privatized prisons, can be found at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.